Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast is back. Thank you so much for being with us. I am your co-host, Arthur Arkus, joined, as always, by Bob Laguerre, our lead Bears beat writer, who has spent all week at Hallis Hall. It's been busy, Bob. I guess this means the offseason is officially underway, and we can crown the 2018 Bears as 16-0 Super Bowl champions, right?
Sure. In the second training or mini camp practice, Prince Amukamara got an interception, so it looks like he's probably going to have 10 this year.
Holy cow. Yeah, that is that definitely qualifies as news. And unfortunately, they're not keeping stats this time of the year. But and I'm joking. The Bears aren't going 16-0. Obviously, they're going 19-0. But no, there's a lot of fun stuff to discuss, Bob, whether it's real football or not. Good to get Matt Nagy with his guys, and it sounds like there was a lot of positive vibes emanating from just the overall, voluntary veteran mini camp and what the Bears feel like they accomplished over 3 days at Hallis.
Yeah, I think you've got guys on the offensive side of the ball that are just thrilled and super excited to be in this offense with Matt Nagy. And part of that stems from his enthusiasm, which we all saw the day he was hired. The interesting thing is that hasn't dissipated one bit. He's still the same guy. He's pumped about everything about the Bears, and especially everything on the offensive side of the ball. Mitch Trubisky seems like he's just thrilled to be working with this guy. And I think one of the most important things that came out in the mini camp is how much coaching Trubisky is getting. It's not just in between plays and in the classroom from Nagy and from offensive coordinator Mark Helfrich and even from quarterbacks coach Dave Ragone. He's immersed in this stuff like 24 hours a day because he's got Chase Daniel and Tyler Bray playing behind him at quarterback, guys who are familiar with Nagy's system. So he's learning from not only coaches, but from fellow players. And he said it's just an eye-opening thing, and it's got him fired up for the season because he sees not only, they're just installing plays right now.
Right.
But he said in between plays that Nagy will explain to him, okay, here's what we do on this play, but here's what it sets up down the road. And they're trying not to get ahead of themselves and not put too much on Trubisky's plate, but they do have him pretty fired up and pretty excited to see how this offense works and to get into it once training camp and the preseason starts. But there's a lot of things to look forward to on this offense because they've added a lot of pieces. And over on the defensive side of the ball, guys are they're not as jacked up and everything, but they are enthused by the fact that for most of these guys, it's either their third or fourth year with Vic Fangio. They know this defense inside out, and it's only going to make them better going forward. They've got a group of guys who are going to be their impact guys who are very familiar with this defense, know exactly what Fangio wants from them, and know what their roles are in any type of situation. So it's a good mix of energy from the guys learning a new system and confidence from the guys on defense that are already set in what they need to do. They've all talked about going from a top 10 defense to a top 5 defense or better. And I think there is that potential.
Bob, early on in the John Fox tenure, I think that there was energy there too, but he was enthusiastically telling us absolutely nothing with every, inch of his being that he could. Matt Nagy, you said, has maintained the excitement level, the energy level. That's great news. Has he maintained the candor that it felt like we were going to be getting from him consistently early on, or at least in his introductory press conference? Do you feel like you are going to learn more from the head coach than you did from his predecessor, or is he going to be fairly, tightly buttoned up as well?
No, I think Matt Nagy can't help himself from talking football, even if he may he may occasionally reveal a state secret, like when Aaron Lynch rolled his ankle and Nagy said, well, he'll be fine. And we all took it for, on its face. Okay, Nagy said he's going to be fine. He's going to be fine until, such a time as that's proven incorrect or that he's misleading or, in some cases, it was with John Fox, just out and out lies or misleading or whatever. I think this guy's up front and, It's early, and nobody's really burned him yet on anything he said. So, you know, we have to wait and see what happens. But he really seems like he's an upfront, honest guy and really enjoys talking football, even with the media, which is, you know, that's a change.
Crazy. Yeah, such a crazy concept. It is certainly, of course, refreshing, and I think probably gets us media members a little bit more excited about the upcoming season, too. Bob, I promise I didn't go into this podcast having it, you know, with the plan of it being a bash John Fox episode. It's really not that. But I do have one more along those lines, only because I found it interesting. And full disclosure, I was not at Hallis Hall this week. LeGarrette had it locked down for us. I was watching from afar and obviously editing all his great work that you can find out at Pro Football. You can find at ProFootballWeekly.com. /Bears, and we'll get to some of those pieces here in a little bit too. But Bob, I found it to be interesting, and you tell me if I'm reading too much into it. Mitch Trubisky and Adrian Amos, both very key contributors, obviously last season, didn't take too long to point out the I don't want to say the upgrades. I'll let you phrase it, but they mentioned the difference in the early in their early impressions from the way they're being coached up from this staff versus the last one.
Yeah, Vic Fangio's got a level of confidence and a level of comfort with these guys because he knows all of them. Mm-hmm. On the other side of the ball, you know, I think, you know, people talk about Mitch Trubisky learning his third offense or having to operate in his third offense in 3 years, and that's significant. But I think even more important or even more crucial to their success is the fact that he's going to be throwing to guys like Allen Robinson, Taylor Gabriel, Trey Burton, and even Kevin White, who he's never thrown a pass to in a regular season game. You know, I asked Nagy about that, and he said, yeah, that comes with the timing, and that comes from working on the side and talking and throwing in their spare time or whatever. But he pointed out most quarterbacks in this league are working with some guys that they didn't work with last year, given the movement in free agency and now with the draft coming up. But it seems even more significant in Trubisky's situation, because those guys, along with probably Tariq Cohen, are going to be four of the top five pass catchers on this team. The good thing is, and the encouragement that you hear from guys, is that Trubisky will not be outworked. He's there early. He stays late. He's all about it. He's all in on football. He wants to learn this stuff as quick as he can. He knows what's on his shoulders, and he's, you know, I think he accepts it gladly, and, you know, he relishes that responsibility. And, you know, coaches, all his coaches and even his teammates are all impressed by how hard he works, how serious he is, how mature he is beyond his years. He's still a young kid in a lot of guys' eyes, but he's approaching the job like a 7 or 8 year veteran.
Yeah, that's encouraging, obviously, and that's something we've been hearing for a while already. But I think in the context of 1 week out from the draft and everyone trying to find ways to knock down guys like Josh Rosen and his intangibles, it's promising that has been something that, to a man, the Bears have raved about really since the day Trubisky stepped in the building. So it certainly can't hurt in his attempt to become the franchise guy the Bears have been looking for quite a while. So, Bob, you mentioned Tariq Cohen. You mentioned a lot of guys in there. We're going to get to them. But I'm thinking that the newsiest item of the week probably was Tariq Cohen's sidekick, Jordan Howard, the starter. Just your thoughts on what Matt Nagy had to say, what Jordan Howard had to say, and maybe what you were able to kind of read in between the lines from getting an opportunity to be up close and personal and have Nagy address the trade rumors and have Jordan Howard address those same rumors as well.
Sure. And there were rumors, and they were, you know, I think well-founded, wondering whether Jordan Howard fits in this offense. Because as we know from what they ran in Kansas City, the running backs are incorporated into the passing game. And Jordan Howard has been nothing short of abysmal as a pass receiver. I think he averaged somewhere around 5.7 yards a catch last year and had some significant drops. The drops that he had stand out way more than any catches he had where he actually did something with the ball after the reception. And then he didn't dodge it. He acknowledged that, you know, this guy has not been a great pass catcher in the past, but he said going forward, Jordan Howard fits in any offense. Jordan Howard is a quality running back, and if he's got deficiencies, then they're going to work on that. You know, they're going to throw him a lot of balls. They're going to get him on a jugs gun. They're going to do whatever they can to shore up any weaknesses he has in his game. And really, if you look at Jordan Howard's game as a whole, other than not being a good pass receiver, he's pretty good in every other aspect of the game. You know, he's done a good job blocking when he's been asked to do that. He can run inside. He's more effective inside, but he can get the corner occasionally. I think that's probably an underrated part of his game. But definitely gave everyone the impression that Jordan Howard is going to be a part of this offense and a key part of this offense going forward. And you know, rather than ignore him in the passing game, they're going to do what they can to get him up to speed so that the other teams know that if Jordan Howard comes out of the game in third down, then they're going to be throwing the ball to the running back. They don't want to, you know, they don't want to telegraph that to other teams. They don't want to let teams know that, well, if Tariq Cohen's in there, good chance they're going to be throwing the ball to him. If Jordan Howard's in there, it's going to be a run. And, you know, versatility is something that the Chiefs always stressed in the offense there and that Nagy's used to. So I think that, you know, put to rest some of the fears and some of the concerns that Jordan Howard might not be back. And truthfully, the Bears aren't in a position where they can get rid of Jordan Howard unless they're going to pick somebody else up, because Tariq Cohen's not going to be your workhorse back. Neither is Benny Cunningham. Those guys are change of pace backs, complementary backs, both of them better pass catchers than runners, although I think Tariq Cohen has showed last year he can be a very, very effective runner, but he's not going to hold up running about 20 times a game, you know, especially if he's returning punts and kickoffs and catching 53 balls as he did last year.
Sure, sure. And what about Howard for his part? Played coy, I believe, when asked about the whole Instagram drama that we discussed on this podcast either last week or 2 weeks ago. You know, really wasn't going to say that he either removed those pictures or didn't, but obviously they were removed. More to the point, do you sense that this is water under the bridge for him? Do you think it could linger in any way on his behalf?
Well, yeah, as you said, Arthur, the whole thing was overblown. And to Jordan Howard's credit, he did not try to blame any of this on his accounting hack, which is usually what happens in situations like this.
Right.
But yeah, I think that thing's in the rearview mirror and they're going to go on from there. And it probably, because it's the offseason, it was given more credence and you know, more importance than it should have been. But I think that as we look back, once training camp starts, this is going to be a blip on the radar and hopefully be forgotten by the time training camp rolls around.
All right. And I should point out, you know, Howard hasn't been good as a receiver. He hasn't been reliable. There have been a lot of drops and a lot of them in high leverage situations. But he did average over 10 yards per carry as a rookie, 29 catches, almost 300 yards. For whatever reason, the explosiveness just went off a cliff last year, down to 5.4 yards a reception. But he was a little bit more efficient. He still had the drops, but I think the catch rate was a lot higher than it was in year one. So I don't know. I think it's too early to, I know Bob isn't ruling this out, that he can improve as a receiver. And I would just stress to listeners, I wouldn't do that yet either. He's 23 years old, and none of these guys are not none. But most of them don't arrive at the NFL as polished pass catchers. So if Matt Nagy says he's willing to continue working on it, I wouldn't discount the possibility Howard's still going to become a bigger contributor in that part of the game. But we'll obviously have to just wait and see. Bob, who else? So you heard from Adrian Amos. He was asked about a contract extension. We talked about I don't know if we quite called it an urgency, but I think we were in agreement that the Bears should be certainly pursuing an extension for Eddie Goldman right this very moment. What about Adrian Amos? Wasn't really willing to disclose much on that, but could you get a feel for whether maybe that had been a discussion between the two sides, or really kind of hard, too hard to read from the soft-spoken Adrian Amos, who doesn't tend to say a whole lot?
Yeah, just based on what we got from Adrian Amos, he really appears to be a guy who hasn't given this even 2 seconds worth of thought at any point. And, you know, a lot of these guys, and it's not just an excuse, but a lot of these guys really do say, that's for my agent to decide when it gets close, or when they make an offer, or when, you know, they need his input, they'll get it from him. Until then, and he made a good point. He said, you know what, at this point, that just takes away from what I should be focusing on, and that's football, and that's getting better in this defense, and that's trying to build on a season in which, you know, he wasn't spectacular, but it was the best of his three seasons as a Bear, and the guy's been a three-year starter, and if he takes another step this year, you know, you're going to have a legitimate safety combination there with he and Eddie Jackson. And I think Adrian Amos, I don't know that the guy's ever going to be a great ball athlete or make plays on the ball or have 8 or 9 interceptions. But, you know, if he's strictly an in-the-box strong safety and a guy who can help out in the run game and occasionally handle the deep middle, great. But he doesn't have to do that a lot because they've got Eddie Jackson, who really is a rangy type guy and can cover the deep middle if he needs to. Right. So I think Adrian Amos is really at a turning point in his career. If he continues to build on what he did last year, he could be around for 5 or 6 more years. If not, then they're going to continue to look to improve that position, which, as you know, as we both know, Bears have been looking to improve at safety since, I think, since Mike Brown, which was a long, long time ago. And, you know, Adrian Amos is going to get the opportunity. And, you know, the ball's in his court at this point. If he continues to do what he did last year, I think he's going to be around for a while.
Bob, I'm of the opinion. This is the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. He's Bob Laguerre. I am Arthur Arkis. Check us out on iTunes, please. Subscribe to this podcast and our NFL PFW podcast. We have a fantasy football one as well. We'd love it if you subscribed and left us ratings and reviews while you're there. That would be very cool. Last point on Amos that I'll just throw in. There are BS artists, Bob, and Bob knows well, in every one of the 32 locker rooms. I truly don't get the sense that Adrian is one of them. I think he says what he means, and I really do believe when he says he's not focused on the extension. So we'll see if he's able to build on that breakthrough season. It would be fascinating, and anyone who follows along with me on Twitter or mock drafts or whatever, I've had Derwin James to the Bears at number 8 in the last 2. Bob has made really compelling arguments for Micah Fitzpatrick, too. So I think they are absolutely at least on the Bears' radar, but I don't think that necessarily has to be a slight toward Adrian. Toward Amos, a former fifth rounder who has already totally exceeded expectations. And I think if the Bears had another safety they felt really good about, it might actually get Amos in an even more suitable role for him if Fangio was somehow able to start maybe messing with some sub-package linebackers, some hybrid players. We haven't seen a lot of that from Fangio, but certainly, Bob, we've seen that as a bigger thing around the league. And I could see a scenario where Adrian Amos could make a great dime linebacker if the Bears wanted to go in that direction.
You know what? That's interesting that you make that point, Arthur, because the one thing I noticed about him, and as you said, he's a man of few words, but he did look pretty swole at the podium. He looks like he's put on some good weight, and he looked pretty pumped up. So, you know, I think maybe this is a guy that could play some linebacker in a nickel or dime package and, you know, give the Bears just another guy who could play in the box and you know, do something to curtail a run game. And I think that only works if you've got a guy like Eddie Jackson and you've got the cornerbacks. And at this point, I really like the Bears are at a cornerback. I think they're going to be improved. And if you're looking for improvement on a defense, I think that's maybe one place where you could see it this year. We know they played well in pass defense as far as yards allowed, sure. But I think the next step for this group is to get some turnovers, which have been missing for, I think, 3 years now. So that's if you're looking for improvement on the defense, that's probably the most notable place that it could happen this year.
Sure, sure. Great stuff from Bob. We're going to get to the schedule release here. I know the listeners want to hear our thoughts on that and see how things set up for the Bears. So we're going to go there in a minute. But before we do, just a few more mini-camp questions. I'm curious about Kevin White, Bob. I'm curious about Leonard Floyd, because Akeem Hicks went out. I'm curious about both of the guys that Akeem Hicks went out of his way to point out as potential big risers this season in Leonard Floyd and Jonathan Bullard. I'm guessing you didn't see much of Floyd as he recovers from the knee, I believe, but you should have saw some of Bullard. Tell me kind of what Hicks had to say and what you thought about those two guys.
Leonard Floyd probably has less activity during the minicamp than most of the media members.
Okay.
The only thing we saw him do was walk. And, you know, to me, that's a little bit concerning because it was allegedly a sprained knee that he had last year. Now we're 4 months removed from that, and he's still not even out there jogging around or anything. So whether the injury was more serious than they let on, Maybe that's the situation. And Nagy was asked about it and kind of, took a pass on being specific about that. So that's a really an issue for the medical personnel. And all he knows at this point is that he's not ready to be out there. If come the OTAs and the next mandatory minicamp, if he's still out there, then I think it's a real concern because they're already deficient at edge rusher. And right now he's the best they've got. But if he's not on the field, that's an area that they really need to upgrade because they can't keep relying on Akeem Hicks to lead the team in sacks every year. Not when he's got the run-stopping duties that he does. So maybe they're just playing it safe for them. Probably that's the case, but a little discouraging that he couldn't do more than walk around 4 months after a sprained knee.
So he went on IR in, I believe, late November with the sprained MCL and PCL, but we should add that there was a surgery that was required. So that kind of certainly at least explains the recovery aspect of it, but we'll be keeping close tabs on Floyd. He's among the most important Bears to this 2018 season. What about Jonathan Bowler? Does he look any different body-wise? I know that's kind of part of his development and kind of the growth that the Bears are hoping to see from him. And just were you surprised at all to hear his name mentioned, too, by Hicks? Is it because he's kind of his job to lose now with Mitch Unrein in Tampa Bay to flank Hicks on that D-line, Bob?
Yeah, well, Bullard is for sure bigger than when they drafted him in the third round 3 years ago. He's probably put on probably at least 20 pounds. He's bulked up, and he's a guy who really is at a turning point in his career this year because to this date, he really hasn't done anything. He's flashed maybe a handful of plays. And, we saw it in training camp last year. He'd blow up some plays with an unbelievably quick first step, but then he'd disappear for days on end. And when they got to the season, he'd have a couple of plays in the game, and then you wouldn't hear his name for a month. So he either gets it done and takes a huge step this year and wins that starting job, or he's playing somewhere else or not playing at all next year because, 2 years in the system – he should have no questions about his assignments and his responsibilities and whatever else. And it's like, it's an open door for him. There's nobody else. It's right now. The job is Jonathan Bullard's to lose. And if he's not out there on opening day, it will be because he lost the job that he was handed. Does he have the ability to do it? Yeah, he's flashed in the past, but it's interesting because when Hicks talked about him, he said that he gets it now. He gets what's required as far as the work ethic and the off the field stuff and the work in the weight room, the film room, all the things that you do when you're not playing in a football game. And he said he thinks the light has started to come on for him. And, if it has, and if he's serious about it, he can definitely be the starter and he can be a difference maker on that defense if he plays like he did in college. But for now, the jury's still out on him. If they address that position with a high draft pick, then I think you're going to see Jonathan Bullard in a fight for his job at training camp. And maybe that's what you need to light a fire under him to get him going, to motivate him. Like I said, it's up to him how well or how much he contributes to this defense, but he's going to get every opportunity to do that this year.
And you're absolutely right, Bob. They've been very sporadic, but some of those flashes last preseason, you thought that the breakout was coming last year. And, interestingly, Matt Nagy comes from the Chiefs, who spent a second rounder in that same draft on Chris Jones. He's quickly developed into one of their most important defensive players. He was a guy I thought that Ryan Pace would be very interested in. I believe they ended up trading down just a few spots, I believe right before the Chiefs selected Jones. I don't remember anyway. It's neither here nor there. But so Nagy knows the type of impact that he needs and can get from that position from a young player. And then lastly, Bob, before we talk about the schedule for just a couple minutes, Kevin White, Nagy had said during one of the news conferences that Kevin looked sharp and crisp, I believe, and fast. Those are things we haven't seen, even in shorts, with no contact. Just your thoughts on the way Kevin White was moving out there. And certainly we saw the off-season Instagram photos. The dude looks big right now.
Yeah, if it was a bodybuilding contest, he'd be a pro bowler. And he did look good. He did look good on the field. And he's kind of a guy, though, who every time you see him catch a pass and make a cut, you kind of cringe.
Yeah.
Because, you know, just because of the injury history, the encouraging thing that we got from Matt Nagy is that he said, and I don't know how familiar he was with Kevin White when he came out of West Virginia, but he said he still got all the athleticism he ever had. And that's basically what he was drafted on, is athletic traits and potential. He was very productive for 1 year in college, but he was a guy who had everything you look for in a wide receiver. You know, super fast, ran a 4.35 of the combine, big, strong, good quickness, able to get separation, big enough at 6'2 or 6'3 that he can take balls away down the field, 50-50 balls from almost any defensive back. He's just got to prove he can stay on the field. And the one thing that is a little bit concerning and that you still have to watch is that the only knock on him was that he wasn't a sophisticated route runner, and he needed work on his routes and to clean those up and be a little crisper in his breaks. And that's something he really hasn't had an opportunity to do, because not only has he missed, 43 of 48 games, most of the injuries that he's had have prevented him from practicing where he could be working on becoming a better route runner. And so he's still, I think, a relatively young player in terms of his sophistication as a wide receiver. All the physical traits are there, but he's a guy who has to, you know, he needs a full off season and he needs a full training camp and he needs a full preseason so that he's ready to go and become a starter on opening day, which he can be. And I think if Allen Robinson's healthy and you've got, you know, clearly that's the go-to guy. If he's on one side, you know, Kevin White could have a nice season as the number two receiver in this offense.
That's, you know, exciting. I think that's kind of a best-case scenario, Bob. I would just say, you know, I think the Bears fans should kind of view Kevin White as anything they get from him at this point being a bonus. He's an easy guy to root for. I mean, he's just had a bad run of breaks, and maybe – and it's worth mentioning, we talk a lot about how Trubisky's comfort level should be immediately increased because of the offense that Nagy and Helfrich are bringing here, but we can also point it out with Kevin White, as you just alluded to, coming from the unrefined spread attack at West Virginia. So I think just schematically, maybe that should help him, but it is a long way to go for Kevin White to come anywhere near fulfilling, obviously, the expectations that accompanied him entering the league. But it's encouraging to hear that that Nagy is impressed early on and that he has looked pretty sharp. So good stuff there. Let's just spend a couple minutes on the schedule on the Pro Football Week, the Chicago podcast. He's Bob Legere. I am Arthur Arkish. Thank you guys for being with us. Please check us out on iTunes and subscribe to all the Pro Football Weekly podcasts. Bob, your first thoughts upon seeing the schedule? To me, it looks a little less grueling early on than we've seen the past couple years, but obviously there's a couple perennial NFC contenders right out of the gate.
Sure. That's the first thing that struck me, is that the early season schedule allows them to build some momentum, which they absolutely have not had in the past 2 years. I think they've won in the first six games of the last 2 years, I think they've won two games. The first 6 weeks of this season, they only play one team with a winning record, and they've also got their bye in week five, which some teams would see as see the downside in that because it comes too early. But for a team that's still learning, especially on offense, having that bye week in week five kind of allows you to regroup. And, you know, there's no reason this team can't be 500 after six games. And I think that makes a big difference, because we know in the past 2 years, actually probably the past 4 or 5 years, that by the time we got to Halloween, everybody in Chicago knew the Bears weren't going to be a playoff team. I think now they've got the opportunity to at least remain competitive, maybe till Thanksgiving when they go to Detroit for that Thanksgiving Day game. And I think that's going to help, especially with a young team and especially with the young guys. If they're 1-5 or 1-6 at the, you know, around the halfway point, the enthusiasm's not going to be there. No matter how upbeat Matt Nagy is, you still have to win games on the field. And I think this schedule gives them an opportunity to get 3 or 4 wins fairly early on.
What do you think about the back-to-back primetime games to start the season in Green Bay, first time there to open the season since 2009, and then welcoming Seattle, a team that's obviously in heavy transition? Bob, to you, is that maybe a testament to some of the off-season buzz that Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy have created here?
Well, I think if people really bought into that, they'd have more than 2 primetime games.
Yeah.
It is kind of surprising that they have, you know, back-to-back, week 1, week 2. I mean, the Packer game is a natural. It's a great rivalry. You know, having them, if you look at that, you saw the first 2 weeks in primetime, and you're kind of thinking, well, what's going on here? Why are they getting this much publicity? And then you look at the next 14 games, and I think 12 of them are at noon, which is great for us in the media because it doesn't require writing on deadline and, you know, any late night trips like that. But, yeah, we're going to find out, and really the whole country's going to find out right away what kind of job Matt Nagy's doing, because, you know, the Packers, obviously, if Aaron Rodgers is healthy, they're an elite team. But they were very disappointing last year. Finished 7-9, have made a ton of changes.
Right.
There's no guarantee that that's going to be a playoff team in week 1. And Seattle, I wouldn't say it's a rebuild, but they've had a ton of changes in personnel. So that's a winnable game if you look at it. You know, they come out of that 1-1. I think right now Matt Nagy would take that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, it's interesting with Seattle. I feel like, yes, of course, Richard Sherman's gone and Michael Bennett's gone, and soon maybe Cliff Avril and Cam Chancellor as well. And I don't know. Yes, it's the right time of year to catch them because of those changes. But I would be, I wouldn't rush to kind of throw them out of the mix in the NFC as some people, and not Bob, but I've seen others. I collect all the NFL predictions for our preview magazine that we're getting close to completion on. And one of the few takeaways I have is people definitely seem to be burying the Seahawks because of the changes this offseason. And it seems like the Cleveland Browns and San Francisco 49ers, Bob, are both getting anointed a little quicker than at least I would be comfortable doing. But the Bears won't see the Browns actually in the preseason or the regular season this year, I don't believe, which is unusual. They normally always play them in the preseason finale. They will head to San Francisco. So, and this is kind of my last thought on the schedule here with Bob LeGuerre on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. Maybe they get a little early respite, as we just discussed, but boy, it's going to, if they are in contention late, and like you said, it might end around Thanksgiving, but if they can keep things going into December, it's going to be difficult. They welcome the Rams in week 14, the juggernaut Rams. Then they will have the Packers in week 15, and then they head out to San Francisco for that reunion with Jimmy G and Robbie Gold 2 days before Christmas, before closing again in Minnesota. Just your thoughts on that last month. That looks like it could be pretty difficult, at least on paper.
Yeah, that could be a killer. 4 out of the 6 are on the road. And the 49ers, I'm not ready to put them in the Super Bowl yet, but that's a tremendously improved team over the team that beat the Bears 15-14 last year. That was Jimmy Garoppolo's first start, and it was clearly the least impressive of his 5 starts,
right?
But he did play well enough to win. He did move the ball, and they are absolutely a better team with him running the show. They were 1-10 before he came in, 5-0 with him at quarterback. So that's a team to be reckoned with this year. That's going to be an interesting matchup. But the good thing is, before they face that killer home stretch, they do have a stretch in the middle of the season where they play 4 out of 5 at home. So, you know, they can at least keep the interest going until Thanksgiving or so. That would be an improvement over what we've seen the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That home stretch that Bob alluded to will include teams like the Buccaneers, the Patriots, the Jets, the Lions, and the Vikings. So, yeah, it's doable. I'm not going to ask you for a prediction on April 20th because I think that's about as absurd as anything. We'll wait a couple months and then it'll still be absurd, but we'll get to that eventually. Bob, that's about all I have today. I really appreciate you jumping on and breaking down the Bears after a busy week. I've got a few things going on before the draft next week. My wife is expecting our second child, so I am going to try and find a way to get Bob and Hub synced up on a podcast before the draft. I will do everything I can to make sure that happens. If it doesn't, have your thoughts changed at all? You've been doing this awesome pre-draft series, positional breakdowns at ProFootballWeekly.com. I would implore the listeners to go check that out, them out. They've been great reads. Has the process maybe changed your thinking at all about the Bears' draft approach, whether at number eight or just overall goals that need to get accomplished to kind of punctuate what's been such an exciting offseason?
Well, one thing that has changed for me is early on, I didn't think there was any chance that Quentin Nelson would fall to number eight. Now, as the quarterbacks continue to get pushed up, and it's looking now like maybe four of the top five or six picks will be quarterbacks, now I think there's an outside chance Quentin Nelson could drop to the Bears. And if that happens, they have to think long and hard before passing on him. Yeah, I think they need more help on defense because they, you know, allocated a lot of resources in free agency to the offensive side of the ball. But defense needs help. The good thing for the Bears is they need help at inside linebacker, outside linebacker. They need another defensive lineman. I think they're fine in the secondary, but I wouldn't discount them, you know, taking a day three pick to maybe build some depth in the secondary. But if you're talking about four quarterbacks going that early, you're going to either get Quentin Nelson, Minkah Fitzpatrick, or Denzel Ward. I mean, if four quarterbacks go, one of those guys is going to be there because Bradley Chubb and Saquon Barkley are also going to go. So they're going to get an impact player, a guy who comes in on day one and is a starter and a difference-making starter. So, yeah, I'm excited about the number eight pick, and, you know, I continue to be more and more unsure of who they're actually going to take because I was all over Tremaine Edmonds early, and I think he's still a great pick. I'm almost to the point where I'm looking at Vita Vea and thinking, yeah, he's probably maybe an 11 or a 12 on most people's draft boards. But if this guy turns into Haloti Ngata and makes the Pro Bowl five times, nobody's going to criticize you for taking him at eight when they thought he should have gone at 12. So a lot of options, a lot of possibilities. And even at 39, I think the Bears with that first, second round pick are going to get a good player who can start for them. And I'm starting to think more and more that maybe the Bears trade down a spot or two in the first round to pick up a third rounder. Because you know Ryan Pace loves the draft. He truly believes that that's how you build a team. And I know it bugs him that they don't have a third rounder this year. So if he can move down a couple of spots, pick up a third round pick, I think that's definitely going to be in play. I think he would consider that.
All right. Awesome stuff from Bob Laguerre. And teams to keep an eye on, guys, if Pace is thinking about trading down. It's the AFC East, certainly the Bills, maybe the Dolphins. And don't rule out the Patriots with two first round picks. And the Arizona Cardinals are the other quarterback hungry team that may be able to make a move up.